The fan drive time on your Thursday. The day Major League Baseball has made its first core economic proposal to the players that went down with a thump. Not a lot got done today. Day after the Leafs lost to Arizona. On the day, we will be joined by the head coach of the Toronto Raptors, one of the NBA's hottest teams. Looking forward to the show today. Arash Madani, Stephen Brunt with you until 7 o'clock. Shai Davidi will pop by, talk a little baseball with us. And we'll also hear from the mayor, Sean Casey, the veteran big leaguer who's host now the Mayor's Office podcast and a contributor for MLB Network. We got a jam-packed show. Mr. Brunt, how are we doing over there?
Parts unknown. Very well. Yes, sir. Yeah. Parts unknown. Well, parts known. We're at home these days. We're like everybody. We're almost everybody. If you're lucky enough to be able to do it, we are confined to quarters. But we're hoping to be back in studio soon. We're, you know, fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. And we're hoping to be back in arenas and stadiums soon, too. It just remains so eerie watching them empty here north of the border when you see what's going on south. The Raptors actually embark on a road trip. They're in Detroit tomorrow, and it's the first of a five-game roadie. The Leafs just wrapped up a three-game trip. They go 1-2 on it. They lost in OT to Colorado on Saturday, so they collected a point there. And I'm not one, Steve, for fake controversies or artificially led hysteria. I was actually a little, I just rolled my eyes when I heard what Sheldon Keefe had to say yesterday after the loss. It was a 2-1 loss in Arizona. It was a back-to-back for a team whose schedule and scene has been turned upside down, just like so many others have in real life and in sports. And they got a point in Saturday, Colorado. They gave them a day off Sunday in Vegas. They're back at it. Daniele, let's play that clip from Sheldon Keefe after last night's loss.
I guess we start to wonder about our conditioning and where we're at there. But clearly, we've got to find ways to be rising to the occasion at the right times rather than falling flat.
And his point was, in the third period, this is a team that didn't have a lot of energy on the bench, that they hit a wall, and that's what made him wonder about the conditioning. Look, let's take the 10,000-foot view for a sec. The Leafs are the third-best team in the Atlantic, and that doesn't even begin to tell the story of actually how decent of a start they've had to the season. Through 35 games, they have 49 points. There's only a handful of teams who have more points than the Leafs, and they've all played more games than Toronto. And it's a team whose schedule has been thrown for a wrench. It's guys coming off the COVID list. Who knows where their actual lungs are, and who knows where, you know, where they are with things. They're playing a back-to-back. They're playing three games in five nights on the road. I just thought, a comment like that, questioning conditioning and all those kinds of things for a Wednesday in mid-January, just seemed like Sheldon Keefe was searching for something there, Steve. I just don't buy it. I don't buy it because it's a pretty good team. I don't think this is a team that needs a wake-up call or anything like that. You know, they've had as many games postponed over the last 2 weeks as they've played. So it's, to me, that's, read the room, Sheldon. Read what's going on out there, and don't start, you know, questioning some of the conditioning of your hockey team in this situation.
Yeah, well, the tricky part is, of course, he's the only one in the room. No one else is, so we don't know what kind of the vibe is around that room. There's nobody really that's in the inner sanctum these days talking to players. So it's hard. Everybody's reading this from a distance. They lost to one of the worst teams in the league last night. That they outshot, you know, they ran into a very hot goaltender, but and outshot him by 30 shots. So it's not like there was a complete no show. But I think it's forgivable if they maybe have taken their eye off the ball a little bit the last few days. You know, there was a stretch in that Vegas game too, where they, especially in the second period, where they just, you know, they looked like they had heavy legs, and you know, Jack Campbell held them in the game for about 10 or 15 minutes in that second period all by himself. But, you know, it's not like there aren't extenuating circumstances, Arash. They They have, you know, gone through the COVID disruptions like everybody. They're playing at home in an empty building. They escaped from escaped to the land of full buildings. They were in Vegas, and you know the right thing to do in those circumstances is give the guys a day off. It's a long season. You know, the schedule is still unsure heading into the next month because of the Olympic break being erased and games that have to be made up. Don't know when you're going to have fans back in your own building. It's, you know, it's warm where they are now. They've, you know, they dropped into warm weather. They, you know, so I think the notion that they, you know, some guys may have drifted a little bit in January is understandable and not fatal. You know, it's not May, but yeah, probably. Like it's interesting that he did that in, you know, in the public, you know, in a public appearance, that he bothered to send that message out. Maybe it's just a little bit of a poke, and maybe he did think some of his guys were treating this trip as this back end of the trip as a little bit of a vacation. It did, you know, again, there were stretches when it looked like that. Again, I thought criticizing the goaltender because he let in one bad one and the two he let in, well, you know, that's not ideal, but they only gave up two goals. Auston Matthews played, you know, out of his mind last night for the home fans. And but I just, you know, I think, again, if you take everything into account, the notion that maybe this two-game stretch in the desert in this year of all years would be the point where, yeah, maybe they weren't fully and totally committed to the task at hand. I think all of us can understand that as human beings. It's
right.
You know, if that's
human,
again,
nature,
that's
man.
And they are human. And, you know, if that's the case in April, then we'll have a different conversation. But there's lots of time for them to kind of regain their edge and their focus, and everybody to come back, the last guys to come back from COVID, and, you know, kind of get their game face back on. Their game face wasn't on last night, but
no,
it, you know, I just
that's
think it
not gonna. But it's, yeah, exactly. Over 82 games, you're not gonna have it every night. You know,
yeah.
I always think back to, you know, I know they're not the same sports, but what Mark Burley would always say about a season, you know, in his starts, he'd say, if you're 30 starts in a season, 10 games you have your ace stuff, and 10 games you're got nothing, and 10 games you're really grinding through to try and find a way. Well, over an 82-game season, there's going to be a handful of games that are throwaways. I'm not suggesting last night was. It was a 2-1 game, and it was a back-to-back, and these guys haven't been trained to do back-to-backs either. It's been a while since they've done a back-to-back. Remember, they were supposed to play one last week, but the game at Montreal got canceled. So many of the games in December got wiped out. And, you know, it's understanding where you are with your legs. And, you know, Kipper was suggesting in the previous show that maybe some of the guys got together and went to the football game in Vegas on Sunday. Great. I'm glad they did if that actually happened. That was on a Sunday. After you picked up a point in Denver, you don't play again till Tuesday. You guys haven't been able to socialize and be together and do anything at home. Why not go do that with some work colleagues? Why not go do that with some friends? Why not have something that you can, you know, rally around and talk about, especially if they were at the football game that turned out to be a dandy? And sweat it out on Monday. It's all part of it. So I just didn't understand that from.
Yeah, as long as they can do that within the protocols, and I don't know what the protocols are now, to be honest, for guys, especially for guys that have already had COVID, which is most of the team. So, you know, you're probably allowed to do more stuff. I understand from a coaching point of view also, you're a little frustrated because it's, you know, there's 2 points on a plate, right? Arizona's, they're terrible. You outshot them like crazy. They're all the extenuating circumstances, but it's a gimme, and you don't want to give away too many gimmies in the course of a season because it could be the difference between, you know, where you finish your playoff seeding, all that kind of stuff. I get it, right? That's a game you tick that box and say that's a win. You know, that's a guaranteed win night. Vegas, they got the 2 points in overtime. That's not a guaranteed win. You know, Colorado's not a guaranteed win. So, you know, it was the weak link in this part of the road trip, and they just kind of. They gave it away. So I understand the frustration on that basis, but everything you said, I agree with, Arash. Just that I hope for the sake, you know, for their own mental health, that they got to stretch their legs a little bit during this trip and, you know, think about something that wasn't COVID and wasn't hockey and, you know, just enjoy themselves a little. I think everybody needs that right now.
I tell you what, if they did some bicep curls, Steve, if they were out in the golf course, if they were out of a football game, good for them. It's probably the best thing that they could do right now.
Yeah.
Considering everything that has gone on over the last little while, they just need something to do. Now, today, novel thing happened. Major League Baseball decided to do something for the first time in 6 weeks. They made a proposal, what they call a core economic proposal to the Players Association. There were three proposals involved in it. This has been reported by a number of national media outlets. Evan Drellick of The Athletic, our Ben Nicholson-Smith chimed in on this, Bob Nightingale from USA Today. MLB proposed to significantly increase pay to players with at least 2 years of major league service who aren't yet eligible for salary arbitration. They're looking for a new Super 2 class about service time and to help end service time manipulation. There's a tweak about a draft lottery proposal, but only the top three teams, and increasing minimal salaries. But baseball wants an expanded playoffs, and the players are pushing back on that. That's the 45-second synopsis on what went on today. Let's bring in the mayor, Sean Casey. Longtime big leaguer and host of the Mayor's Podcast. Sean, thanks for joining us. Great to be with you again. We were just talking about... So the Toronto Maple Leafs, Sean, it's you know, you're coming on to a Toronto show. The coach yesterday said maybe our conditioning wasn't there, suggesting that the boys may have gone out in Vegas a little bit. Can you please put into perspective over the course of a season just how important it is for guys to go out and let off a little bit of steam, especially if you've been in a lockdown back home as they are here in Ontario?
Well, I think over the course of, whether it's 162 games in baseball or, what is it, 81 in hockey, and 82 in hockey, and seems like, in this day and age, I don't know, it's so crazy to even go out. It's even crazy to say people should go out. So, but I do think that, the guys getting together at some point, letting off some steam is probably a good thing over the course of that long of a season.
Yes, they are. They're not robots. I'm with you.
Right.
Yes.
You getting itchy for this offseason to start looking like a normal offseason? I think a lot of fans, when you get into the depths of winter, where we are anyway, we're in the depths of winter, everybody wants to look ahead to pitchers and catchers and opening day. And it's kind of hard to do that when there's stuff getting in the way. How are you feeling in terms of winter looking towards spring and let's getting some baseball going?
I think another thing that everyone loves, if you're a baseball fan, is like guys looking to see where the free agents are going, who's signing where, kind of just keeping baseball in the news a little bit, And so, for me as a fan, it's kind of a bummer to see, there's not really much baseball news. I'm working at MLB Network too. There's not much to report on either. So, there's not a ton going on, but you hope that, you hope that in the CBA that the players and the owners come together with something that works for both sides and that we can get going hopefully on time into spring training.
What was the, as a player, what was the deal that stood out to you? Do you remember, Sean, that, you saw something happen in an off season, you're like, whoa, he got that? Is there a deal? Is there a player? Is there a moment that really, all these years later, you still remember?
I think the A-Rod deal, right? When he went to Texas for like $250 million back when that wasn't normal.
That's the one.
You know what I mean? Like back when that was like, wow, are you kidding me? $250 million he's going there for? And I think that was the biggest one where you really thought, wow, is that where baseball is going? It's that healthy that a team like the Texas Rangers has the money to give that kind of, jack to Alex Rodriguez. That's the one contract I think that really like glaringly comes out. Cause you think about the Kevin Brown one, when he first made over $100 million, you're like, wow, over $100 million. Then Manny Ramirez, made 160 or something like that. But when A-Rod made 250, I think everybody was like, wow, that's another level.
Yeah. I think there might've been a little bit of buyer's regret on that one, Sean, as I recall, like it didn't, that one didn't necessarily, that's, setting that precedent.
Yeah. Well, because I also think like they were losing too. Like, so he'd make all this money, but they were under 500. You know what I mean? I think one thing with baseball realizes if you really want to win at the big league level, you got to have starting pitching. So if you're putting all your money into that lineup, you're going to get burned in the long run because, you know, it's the starting pitching that wins ballgames. I mean, look at a guy like Trout out in Anaheim. I mean, this guy is one of the greatest players the game has ever seen, and we don't see him in the postseason because, you know, they don't really spend money on pitching, and they got a terrible, terrible staff every year, and they don't make the postseason.
We had Sean Casey's with us. We had Adnan Virk on yesterday, and I asked him this. And Sean, I'd love to get your take on this. If I made you commissioner for a week, I said, Casey, here you go. Blank slate. You can do whatever you want. Make this product better. Make the whole thing more entertaining. Let's find a way to get more young people engaged in the game. What are a couple of the moves you're making?
Wow, interesting. I like some of the things that they've already done. You know, I think the universal DH would be better. I just think the game's better, you know, at this stage. You know, we're always, oh, you know, I played in the National League. I thought it was great with the double switch and all that. And, you know, the pitchers getting down bunts and stuff. But the bunt is done. You know, no one, this day and age, no one bunts. And, you know, I think, people don't want to see pitchers get hurt. So I think that universal DH would bring more action to the game. I do like the extra innings, a guy on second. I don't know. I just kind of – it brings a lot of strategy. I think you see the bunt come back in extra innings and, like, you know, actually trying to strategize things. I would get rid of the shift, personally. I don't know. I just
you would,
feel
huh?
like – I would. I would do something like, you know, you got to keep four guys, you know, two on the one side, two on the other. Now, you could bring them over, but they got to stay on the dirt. You know what I mean? Like, you can't have – two right fielders. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I feel like it would be cool to see some. I don't know what the rule would be, but something where it's like almost like a NBA legal defense or something like that. I think another cool thing would be it would be cool to see if they could figure it out a way to, you know, keep miking up the guys like they do. You know, I think that's just interesting for the fans nowadays. The fans want to really go into the game. And if they could figure out mics that, you know, that aren't, you know, so bulky or big in your pocket in the back or something where, you know, you could really get into the game.
Yeah, a little more.
That's what I would do.
Personality. Yeah, bring out the personality.
Yeah.
But how do you, well, Sean, what do you think, like, expanded playoffs, that's going to happen. Like, the owners asked for a 14-team playoff today. The players, I think, are willing to go to 10 or 12, I forget which, but it's, you know, it's coming, right? There's going to be an expanded playoff. I get it, and I understand it, and I think I actually think it's going to be good for the, to drive kind of general interest in the game, bring people in who aren't maybe hardcore fans at the end of the year, keep more teams in pennant races. But I know there are traditionalists out there. Like, how do you feel about expanded playoffs?
Well, how many teams are there in hockey? How many teams make the playoffs in hockey?
About half.
It's a lot, right? Right. About half the teams make it. And I don't know. There's so many people. I, you know, being a Penguin fan living here in Pittsburgh, you know, people are like, playoff hockey is the best hockey. You know, one of the greatest playoffs is playoff hockey and how intense it is. And so I don't know. In 2020, when they had the 14-team playoff, it was kind of cool to see towards the end so many cities in it. I think the one down draw of that is that for a player, you play 162 games, and you really want to get rewarded on the 90-plus win season. It's not easy to do. It's tough to do. So you're really getting your best teams in the playoffs. If they went to a 14-team playoff, you know, you're definitely, you know, diluting, you know, those teams that have really got after for 162 and proven they have a good staff, a good pen, and they've been consistent. So, but I don't mind adding a couple more teams. I think it's good for the game as far as more cities being involved and more fan interest.
So baseball wants it. The players are pushing back. Is this a negotiation tactic in your mind, knowing that this is the kind of one bargaining chip as a players union that you have? Because it's like, to me, it's a no-brainer. If you're a player, why wouldn't you want to play in October? Why wouldn't you want to get a postseason check?
Right. You know what? I don't know exactly what the you know, what is a bargaining piece and what's not. It seems like that would probably be a pretty good one if that's what the owners want. But, yeah, you know, maybe it does make sense for players, too, as far as, you know, getting more money for the postseason. But I do know, like I said, as a player, there is something about being on a team that wins 90-plus games and you know, getting rid of some of the teams that are right around 500.
So what do you think, guys? You know, look, we all know, you know, when things turn on here, whenever it is, whenever there's like the big free agents, you know, Carlos Correa is going to sign somewhere. What do you think, guys who are on the bubble, who are on the edge, you know, who might, you know, be clinging to the edge, the 26th spot on a major league roster, or, you know, in that kind of gray area between AAA and the majors? What are those guys thinking in a shortened? With a shortened offseason, where, you know, we may have a 2-week dash to fill those spring's training slots, I would think that would be a difficult position to be in right now.
I'm sure those guys that are the fringe guys that are right on the fringe. Yeah, it's a difficult situation to be in because, you know, it's going to be a mad dash to get rosters filled if it comes down to, you know, if it goes up to spring training or into spring training. You know, it's going to be a scramble to get guys. On, and I'm sure there'll be a few guys lost in the shuffle, but I think those are sometimes that's the price you pay in the collective bargaining agreement years, where you have a lockout and you come down to the last second. But you know, but those guys are definitely sweating it out.
So Sean, you were drafted 95. What was your first spring training? Was it that year or was it the next?
Now my first spring training was my first minor league spring training was 96 with the Cleveland Indians and down in Winter Haven. Then my first big league spring training was 98 with the big league club.
So then you were there with the big league club, and what did you do? 10 or 11 springs? If you're
a vet, then all of a sudden, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you're a vet, how much time do you need to get ready now?
Well, it's funny. It depends who your manager is. I always felt like I needed 50 at bats, and then I got to Detroit, and Jim Leland's like, I get everybody 70 at bats. I'm like, 70 at bats? I don't want to be grinding in spring training. You know what I mean? I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. So I don't know. Like, I think it was somewhere in that happy medium of like 50 to 70 at bats. You know, I think 70, for me, 70 was on the high end. It always, as a veteran player, I always knew what I needed to do, and I needed to just start really feeling my swing, feel good about that last. You know, going into that last week or in the last week, so that when, you know, you get to that opening day, you're ready to go. And the worst thing about being hot at spring training to be like, man, I was just 3-for-4. Like, these don't count. Like, you got to be kidding me. You know, it always drive you crazy to do too well.
Yeah. So, you know, they always say that that pitchers obviously need the most time. I've always wondered that because it's so hard to get a real answer out of a player because they want to kind of toe the party line, but they're so ready to get out of spring because they've been stuck in Dunedin, Florida or Winter Haven or wherever for like 7 weeks, 8 weeks. They're like, let's get the show on the road. I've always wondered what that kind of sweet spot answer is of how long spring's required.
Well, it's not as long. I think it's too long now. I really do. Like, I think spring training back in the day was for the guys that, you know, Mickey Mantles and all those guys that were like, they're working in the offseason before the union. You know, Ken Griffey Sr. told me that he made more money in the steel mills of Denora, PA in the offseason than he did during the season with the Cincinnati Reds. You know, these guys had to work, but so there was no time to work out. There were no personal trainers. So when you came to spring training, you needed 7 weeks to get ready. These guys now, their full-time job is working out, you know, with personal trainers, throwing all year long, hitting all year long. When they come to spring training day one, they're almost ready to go. So I almost feel like, you know, it's probably a few weeks too long. I think every player would say that. And the pitchers don't need – I really believe the pitchers don't need 7 weeks to get ready.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I'm with you. I'm absolutely with you. Yeah. Sean, appreciate it, man. Always good to visit with you. Always good to catch up. Host of the Mayor's Office Podcast. There goes Sean Casey. Thanks again, man.
Okay, fellas. Nice talking to you. Cheers.
All right. There's Sean Casey. I've always believed that, Steve. They don't need 7 weeks to get ready for a season. Come on.
No, well, it's, but it's, I guess if you have a bunch of pitching injuries in April, then somebody's going to argue the contrary. That's the they are valuable. Those arms are a valuable commodity. So, but yes, spring training can the last 2 weeks of spring training, if you're there, can seem kind of redundant, not just to the people covering it, but to the players. I've been there a lot of times and kind of thought, wait, hang on a second, what are we waiting for here? And I, you know, when the veteran guys aren't really playing much and everybody's itching to get the season started. But we look, I think we will see. I think you will see this year what the minimum is, because that's what we're going to get. You know, the fact that, you know, we'll talk to Shai about this in the next hour, but the fact that this, you know, today's proposal was summarily rejected and the counter proposal is coming is as predictable as the sun rising tomorrow.
Yes.
And this is going to come down to the wire. We don't know where the wire is, because that is to be determined. But we will see the minimal, whatever the minimal spring training is, because you know what? They don't make any money in spring training. Nobody. Mm-hmm. Players don't make any money, and the owners don't make any money. So they're going to cut that to the absolute bare minimum to get the season started. So I guess we'll get to test your theory.
Yeah, we'll chop it up with Shai Davidi coming up at 6 o'clock. But first, the Raptors have won 5 of 6. They're about to embark on a 5-game road trip. Fred VanVleet last week was the best player in the Eastern Conference. The head coach of the Raptors, Nick Nurse, joins us on the Fan Drive Time next. It's the Fan Drive Time. It's Thursday. Arash Madani, Stephen Brunt with you until 7 o'clock. More on the first, the initial, the opening salvo of a proposal from baseball to its Players Association that was quickly rejected by the union. That's coming up with Shai Davidi a little later on. There has been another coach fired in the NFL. One and done in Houston for David Culley. The Texans are looking for a new head coach. What are we up to? 6, 7 openings now in the NFL? We're not quite sure what's going to go on with the Raiders, whether or not they're going to keep the interim tag going on there. So that's on the front burner. GM interviews all over football. That's a go. And we're also going to talk some Raptors, and we're about to be joined by the head coach of those Raptors who are playing really good basketball. Steve, they're starting to get everybody back, and Siakam looks like he's finding a groove, and yes, Van Vliet's doing Van Vliet things. If you're a Raptor fan, I think this is the most encouraged you have to be by what you're seeing from your team since before COVID hit way back in March of 2020. They were on a roll then, but since it has unraveled. And it appears now the train is kind of back on the tracks.
Well, since then, the world has unraveled, right? So right. The world unraveled, and then the Raptors unraveled. You're right. The bubble experience was pretty awful, and the Tampa experience wasn't much better, and the countdown on Kyle Lowry's career, you know, far away from home was unsatisfying in a lot of ways, and I think fans went into this season, Arash, kind of, kind of unsure what they had, waiting to see what Scottie Barnes was going to be, waiting to see how this group would come together, and wondering whether this was something you build on, or this was a team you build on, or a team you took apart. And of course, remember the Masai thing was hanging in the air for a good chunk of that as well. So it's been a pretty unsettled time, you know, honestly, going back to the championship, because the Kawhi drama followed that. So it's been hard for a Raptors fan to kind of just take a deep breath and say, this is where we are, really, since that, you know, since parade day. But this, I think it is interesting, kind of emerging from all of the, you know, all of the uncertainty and the shortened lineups and the endless kind of discussion around the COVID list and now the empty building and that, you know, in an Eastern Conference that's kind of all over the place. But this last stretch, including, you know, losing a close game to a really good team in Phoenix, a really good Phoenix team. It's probably the first time in a long time, you're right, where people can kind of go, let's start charting the path forward here, and this could get really interesting.
I can't think of a player who's been more of a lightning rod in this market in the last 22 months than Pascal Siakam. I really can't. I was thinking about this earlier today. the ups and the downs and the struggles and the bubble, and then, you know, the issues in Tampa last year and getting into that argument with Nurse. I mean, I look at this as a very quietly Pascal Steve through 25 games. He's averaging 21-8-5.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's playing better than 35 minutes a night. And if you have, look, Pascal Siakam will not be the number one on a team. I think we can all agree on that. But if he can continue to deliver 1A or number two status, if you have Van Vliet doing what he's doing in an Eastern Conference where, yes, Chicago's rolling, and yes, Milwaukee defending champs, and the Nets are the Nets, but if you can have Van Vliet, Siakam as 1 and 2, because you have Ananobi, because Barnes is kind of there in the weeds, I really think that Siakam's production is as vital to this whole thing as anybody else. As important as Fred has been, you know, to open the year, and he's the stable kind of voice and force in this thing, to me, this is about making Pascal go.
Well, I think that has been the question. That's definitely the question again, once in the post Kawhi era, was whether, and I think he does have to be essentially be your one, because if he's not your one, you have to pivot and go in a different direction. So, I think the puzzle of, you know, what he went through in the bubble and having COVID and just trying to define what he is, it's been a long, difficult, unsettling stretch, but in this last while, I think people as a Raptors fan, you can start feeling pretty darn comfortable that, you know, that the Pascal Siakam you saw before the bubble is still there.
Yeah, no question. The Raptors had won 5 in a row until the other night. They lost to Phoenix by 4. They're about to embark on a 5-game road trip that starts in Detroit tomorrow. As hard as they played against Phoenix, it's wild how these things go, especially in a social media world. It feels like the biggest takeaway from the game against the Suns was Devin Booker and the mascot getting into it at the free throw line. Let's bring in the head coach of the Toronto Raptors. Nick Nurse, you have coached in Birmingham and Manchester and Brighton and Rio Grande and all over Iowa. Who is the craziest mascot you ever ran into? It's the hard-hitting questions people are here for.
You did not expect that one.
Man, I got to think about that one. But I think the Iowa Energy, our mascot's name was Surge. Not like Surge, but Surge. So Surge of Energy. He was pretty wild.
So who's bringing the Surge of Energy to this Raptor team over the last week and a half, Nick?
You know what about everybody is. You know, I think there's some guys that are, you know, Freddie and Pascal obviously are playing at a super high level. OG continues to go. Scotty, when he's out there, has been very solid. The two bigs have both been playing good, and then we're getting some real juice out of Boucher off the bench, and a couple other guys too. So it's been a pretty much a collective effort here, and it's been good to see. It's been going on for, you know, 5 or 6 weeks, bar the COVID kind of mess there for a couple weeks, right?
Well, and that's, I was going to say, like, again, the COVID mess in the world and all that. I'm loath to say, you know, you're coming out of it and we're coming out the other side here. But, you know, purely from your, you know, the world's got a ways to go. But purely in terms of your basketball team and kind of, you know, obviously you're still playing in an empty building at home, which is not in any way ideal. But do you feel, Nick, like a little bit, maybe you've come through the storm and, you know, in terms of guys being available to you or not being available to you, and, you know, kind of the sun starting to shine a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, yes, and I'm just like you. You know, you never know what's around the corner here, right? I think you know, we took it with about, I don't know, something like 12 guys at the same time, you know, were gone because of it, so pretty much wiped out our roster, right? So, you know, that means they all come back, and hopefully, you know, they'll steer clear or nothing else happens on that front. And during that time, we're able to get a little healthier too there for a minute.
And again, when I think we got all the pieces out there, we can look, you know, other teams in the eye, you know, physically, size-wise, et cetera. And then it's just up to us to get ourselves organized. And I feel like we're getting more organized as each game clicks by, and we're starting to guard, and we're playing hard, and giving ourselves a chance at least.
Nick Nurse with us here on the Fan Drive Time. Nick, it was the other night when New Orleans came through, and Valanciunas was talking after the game. And he kind of joked. He said, Fred's taken over Kyle Lowry's spot. But there was a lot of merit to what JV said there in terms of it's just not his minutes. It's just not his spot on the floor. It's kind of that role. It's kind of the leadership deal, the face of the franchise thing, if you will. And where are the areas you've seen Van Vliet grow the most to become kind of the franchise face, if you will, for this team?
Well, probably just doing it, right? Just going through it kind of game after game. And, you know, I always say, like, the most remarkable thing for me as a coach when I came to this league was to see these guys that do it night after night after night, you know, to score right. 20 a game in this league. You just got to do it again and again. And that to me is what is super hard. You know, there's only a really small percentage of the guys that can do that. Right. So, that to me, he's going through it. He's having to do it. He's responding. And if he has a bad one, he usually bounces right back, you know, and that's again what the good ones do.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember the last time he had a bad one. I haven't got one right now. But are the minutes he's playing sustainable?
Well, the other night got a little high, right? I mean, I think we got to get him back into a 36 to 38 realm, and I feel pretty comfortable with that. I think most nights if we've got you know, a couple things. One is, you know, we kind of moved Pascal to the backup point guard, but he kind of needs Scotty out there a bit too, just in case teams will take that out or apply up court pressure or whatever, then Scotty can kind of give him a break here and there, you know, a little bit how Kyle and Freddie used to do it, just share it, whoever was kind of a little bit more at ease, depending on what the other team was doing. And then I expect one of our other two younger guys to bounce back and get in the rotation if we ever get into that scenario too, where we can get them down. You know, we were a little short on bodies the other night, which pushed it up to 43-44.
Yeah, and, you know, being short on bodies between injury, COVID, whatever, has been an issue all year. In a perfect world, Nick, what does your rotation look like?
Well, I think that, you know, it always depends a little bit on who you're playing, right? But I would say, like, Kem and Precious share that five spot for the most part. I know neither one of them start when we're fully healthy, but it's pretty quick that we get them in there, right? And go to that. They share that, and then, you know, I think the main guys, you know, Gary, Freddie, Pascal, OG, Scotty, those guys, you know, get into the 35, 36 minutes a night range. And Boucher gets a solid rotation there as a second unit guy, about 20 minutes, and then the last few are up for grabs again, depending on who we're playing and who's healthy and who's playing well.
There's people talked a little bit about Malachi Flynn this year. I think maybe fans hoped that this would be a year where he'd be able to step in and take some of those his point guard minutes, and you know, it hasn't necessarily worked out that way. Nick, where is he at kind of in the developmental curve? What's he got to do?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I like the progress he's making from a standpoint of the way he's running the team. I think he does a good job when he comes in of getting us in a pretty decent organized system. He really does. He's really grown in that. And it's just, and I think he probably can do really well in that role if the majority of the starters are out there with him. I think if he gets in those roles where he's now looked to do that and score a bunch as well, he can score. He just hasn't really yet. You know, I just think he's gotten a lot of minutes. He's gotten some opportunities. We've had to start him some games. We've had to do some things. And his shot just hasn't fallen quite enough consistently. He's kind of a little bit all or nothing. He'll go some night, he'll make go 5 for 6, and then he'll, you know, go 1 for 10 or something like that. And I think that guy needs to be just a little bit more, little less high volume and a little bit more efficient.
That's the voice of Nick Nurse, the Raptors coach. Nick, it's wild. I've, especially through the holidays and now into early January with lockdown, I've been reading a lot of old school books and, you know, reading some stuff about Lou Alcindor and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and kind of that era and just how difficult it was for them as rookies and in their second year in that era going up against grown-ass men. And I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute, they played 4 years of college and it was difficult in year one and year two. Now some guys who are like 18 months removed from playing AAU in high school are in the league. When do you think, and I know for every player it's different, but how long does it take in your mind from what you've seen over the last few years for a guy, you know, for a first round pick or a second round pick who's played a year or two of college to fully get a grasp on what the NBA lifestyle and what the NBA game and what the NBA demands are all about?
Yeah, it's a really good question because I think we're probably, you know, people ask me about Delano and Scotty a little bit too. You know, those guys have already played their college season. You know, we're not even to the halfway point. They're past the amount of games they just played, you know, when they were in college. So there's the first thing. You're like, they're like looking and saying, holy moly, we play a lot of games here, and they're just coming one after another, right? So I think those guys are always going to have some up and downs just based on that in general, getting a feel for just the landscape, right? And I think so that's the first thing to consider. I always say it usually takes about a full season to really understand NBA defense because, again, it's just the spacing and the size and the rotations and the terminology and all those things are just so different that, you know, unless you're really high IQ, you got to be out there getting all those reps and seeing all these situations. And it's on us as coaches to continue to put them through them, you know, even though it's hard, you know, you sit here and you just have you got a back-to-back coming and then you got to travel and then you got another game and another day off and another game. You know, when are you doing that stuff? Well, you got to find time to do it. You got to do it away from practice. You got to do it in the morning before shoot-arounds, after shoot-arounds. You got to continue to drill those reps so they can catch up as fast as they can. But nothing replaces being out there and going through it in the game. So I'm not sure I answered all of your question there, but that's probably enough
on
that one.
Yeah, so yeah, just got to go do it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's going to be ups and downs, right? There really is when you're young and going to be ups and downs.
Nick, you guys are I know sleeping in your own bed is preferable. I know being at home is always preferable, but, you know, it's got to be – I don't know what it's like playing in an empty arena. You can tell me, but it's got to be – it looks kind of creepy from the outside, kind of eerie, you know, those empty buildings. Mm-hmm. Is any part of you looking forward to getting – you know, playing road games in front of human beings?
I think so. I mean, I think we've done a good job with it, but just like you said, there's some nights where there's just, the atmosphere has no juice, you know, and it's, you got to really continue to pick yourself up and players got to pick each other up. And, you know, sometimes both teams have none and the refs have none and the scorer's table has none. And, you know, it's just kind of with a big old empty arena, you know, sometimes you can hear every ball bounce and all that stuff. But yeah, I mean, heard some of the guys say they were looking forward to getting back and playing in front of fans, you know, and feeling some of that electricity. So, yeah, I guess so.
Nick Nurse with us. Nick, before we let you go, your other job, your side hustle, just happens to be coaching our national men's basketball team. We saw the women announce a new coach there, too. of all the guys that you've spoken with around the league, when you go into different arenas or teams come here, which is the player who wasn't in Victoria that you've talked to that you're most excited to get a chance to work with?
Well, there's a bunch of them, really, you know.
Yeah.
There is. I mean, I think that, you know, when you watch Memphis play and you see what Dylan's doing at both ends of the floor, you know, he's a real, you know, his toughness and his competitive drive. Dylan Brooks, you know, would probably be one. I don't know. That's one I could pick out for you, I guess. There's so many of them. You know, every time we turn around, there's a Canadian coming to town, it seems like. Josh Primo the other night. Nikhil the other, sure. You know, the game after that. And just keep on coming. So it's great to see. It's great to see. And I don't know. I'm excited to get them all under one roof and on the same floor here one of these days.
Yeah, when will that be? When's the next time you get the band together?
Well, our team plays in February, but it's without the NBA guys. And then in June, late June, first part of July, we have a window for the NBA guys to play. So be in June.
All right. Well, we look forward to that. Nick, appreciate the time. And
no
safe travels. 5-game road trip coming up.
Okay. All right. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Nick.
Thanks, Nick. There's Nick Nurse, the head coach of the Raptors. A lot there. I like that we got a kind of as firm an answer as you're going to get in terms of the target that the coach has for Van Vliet minutes. He said 36 to 38. He'd be pretty confident with that kind of number that they're happy having Pascal Siakam in a backcourt role. I thought that was interesting, that this is not going to be just a temporary thing because of injury and COVID and whatnot. That's the direction they're going with. And he knows. He knows that he needs to have Scottie Barnes available and Gary Trent available. So I thought there was a lot of revealing stuff there from the coach.
I think so. Now, in an ideal, well, not an ideal world, but in the next, as we head towards the deadline, and again, team's got some decisions to make about some stuff, but I would think still finding a point guard to take some of those minutes and take some of the load off Fred VanVleet that they can trust, who's mm-hmm. not named Goran Dragic, is still got to be one of the goals heading for the deadline for the team. They're getting by, and the Siakam thing's working fine, but I think I'd say that's less than an ideal solution right now.
Sure, and another big man. And look, there are openings in Indiana. There's availability in Portland. As much as Kem Birch is there, that could be a significant upgrade too. And it's going to be really interesting leading into the deadline. How this road trip goes, especially what the thought process becomes. There are tough games and there are winnable games on this trip. I mean, they open in Detroit and then it gets a little more difficult with Milwaukee and Miami back to back. But you're going to have a real good idea by the end of the month. You know, there's two with Miami. Atlanta's in there. They just made the move with Cam Reddish today. The Bulls are in that conversation. So you're going to have a real good idea of where your team is going to be going into February. We thank Nick Nurse for joining us. Baseball has made its first proposal to the players. It was rejected in quick order. What does that mean? Where do we go from here? What's the next move from the union standpoint back to the league? We'll chop all that up with Shai Davidi, Sportsnet's baseball columnist, when we return on the Fan Drive Time.